In 2003, Nike signed 13-year-old Freddie Adu to a seven-figure contract. But Freddie didn't live up to the hype. He has turned down every single documentary project looking closely at the details of his career. Until now.
People are going to look at everything you did because of the hype surrounding your arrival and what they think you can be.
I'm Grant Wall, and this is American Prodigy, Freddie Adu, from Blue Wire Podcasts.
Hello, welcome to another Touchy Goodness podcast. My name's Lewis, and today I'm joined by three regulars. We got Shabs, we got German Dan, and we got Dr. Leroy. How you doing, lads?
I'm all right, man. You need to drop that, man. Just stop it, man.
I'm not dropping it until the coronavirus goes. Until you stop being our nation's hero, that's when I'll drop it.
Oh dear.
But yeah, lads. Before we start with this depressing episode, I had to motivate. Do you know what? Like, it's bare funny because today, well, this week, no one wanted to put their hands up for the podcast. No one wanted to like be reminded, like, oh, there's a podcast tonight. Everyone was just kind of thinking, well, if no one mentions anything, maybe we won't have to talk about Arsenal. And you know, I had to do my duty of like, you know, come on, guys, we actually have to put a piece of content out. We've got to grab to get some balls and actually talk about Arsenal, right?
Lewis had to round up the troops, man.
Yeah, I had to round up.
Lewis rounded up the troops on Sunday in the Discord. I came to back my boy, and
we got spun, man.
Yeah, you know, we got absolutely spun, but we keep it moving, man.
I came there for a quick drive, by the way. I just came there.
Listen, I got there as they were spraying.
Yes.
Yeah, so, I wasn't playing Sunday. I apologize for not turning up. You know, I basically did the Westbrook.
You
I
did
was
a,
looking at the message and you did that.
You did it. You did a Mesut Ozil. That's what you did.
Yes, I'm still getting paid.
big away game. Big away game outside of London. Boom. There you go.
I mean, I got to respect my goal.
But yeah, as the guy said, you can join our Discord. You can join the pain as a group, as a collective. Join the Discord, become a patron, and you can enjoy and live the misery through us, with us, on the Discord. All right. I know it doesn't sound like an attractive proposal, but it's there.
Hey, at the moment, though, man, there's too many other opposition fans there. And it's too much heat.
It's too much Mariah, if I'm being honest.
I'll be honest with you. I don't like that. But
No. There's a lot of unsavory characters on there. But we won't talk too much about them. We've got too many of our own unsavory characters to talk about with the football club. So, look, I don't quite know what's going on at the moment, guys. I'm not too sure where to address this. It's getting into that territory of that Unai Emery territory where we've been saying things for a few weeks now. And nothing is changing. If anything, it looks like we're progressively getting worse. Like, I mean, let's look at some of the positives from Sunday. We started to have a few more shots, at least. You know, I think we had 13 this week, did we? Was it 13? Yeah, 13. Cheeky 13 shots, so not too bad. We didn't get outshot by the opposition. Yeah.
That's it, you're done.
Sorry, guys. Yeah, I don't really have much else to say, really. Let's start lineup. I think that's the only place we can really start. So, were there any surprises in here? I know Willock got afforded another start. What do you guys think about Willock's inclusion again as a number 10? A position I don't think he is comfortable playing. I think his best work is always, you know, deeper. I don't think he's a 10, and he just looked lost. I felt a bit sorry for him, to be honest.
I'm less worried about his inclusion, more about his his role, him playing in the 10. I kind of agree with you, Lou. I think having him in the center of the park as a, you know, box to box midfielder is probably where we can hope for the best from Willock. I think him playing ahead of the ball, him playing in between the lines, him having to play in the half spaces, higher up the pitch in the final third, I don't see it.
Yeah.
I agree. For me, if you look at the number 10, obviously it's becoming a bit more redundant in modern football. two massive characteristics you need in a 10.
Good technical,
technical security. Mm. You've got to be technical because you're in the mixer. You've got no space in between the lines. And number two, it's intelligence. You've got to pick up spots where no one else can see. You've got to pick up clever bits of space. And you've got only a few actions to be able to do what you've got to do. You've got to be able to receive in a half turn and pass it quickly. You've got to be able to make a decision quickly. Now, Willock's attributes are physical attributes mainly, and then he does have some good off the ball attributes, but he just doesn't have anything that we would need to play the 10 for Arsenal. He's not able to link the play because he can't pick up the positions, and he just doesn't have the brain for it. He goes and kills space too early. That's another thing. I don't understand what in his game makes people think he can play 10.
So why does Arteta think he can play 10?
I have no idea. No idea.
Like, because I'm trying to understand the logic behind it, you know?
If this was Emery, I'd get it. Because
a pressing 10.
Yeah, pressing 10 and a running. Mm. I don't really understand what Arteta's playing at, to be honest with you. I don't even see Willock playing well in the advanced 8 position, personally, in my opinion, in a midfield 3, based on what I'm seeing now. If he's going to play in any position, it's going to be at the base of midfield. He'd have to improve defensively to do it because he's not very good defensively. But that's the only position I see him working in. And when I've seen him in a lot deeper positions in midfield, then he's looked okay and functional. But in the 10 or in advanced positions, no. I mean, like, he can get in the box, but I think that would be from a deep position like an Aaron Ramsey type of player rather than a advanced 8 or a number 10 being tasked to link the play between the two lines.
Do we have any players that could potentially play that 10 position? Because
yeah, we do.
Who? Well, other than the obvious.
Yeah, of course. I know he ain't here, so and that's Arteta's fault for being here. But we still have other players that could play in the 10. I mean, no one on this Zoom call is William's biggest fan, but William can play centrally. He can receive on the half turn, drive with the ball into space. There's there to vacate. I think William can play as a 10. ESR can obviously play as a 10. You could even try Nelson as a 10. I think Nelson on the right. I think Nelson has some good attributes. Actually, I'm warming up to him, and I was quite a big critic of him. But maybe it's because we just have this lack of quality right now. But
the bar is on the floor, basically.
Yes, basically that. But yeah. he looks nicer than what we have. But him playing on the right wing didn't make sense to me. Like, if he plays anywhere for this team, it should be on the left or potentially centrally somewhere where he can receive in between the lines. On the right, complete misutilization. Will look complete misutilization. Just, I think players are in positions where they're not able to thrive. And we already have a squad that is deprived of quality and also a bit limited in what they can do. And then you misutilize players, it has a bigger knock-on effect on your ability to control games, create chances and sustain pressure. And we were lucky. Wolves are shit.
Wolves were bad. They weren't good at all. They weren't good at all. I want to ask you guys a question, right? So obviously at the back end of Unai Emery's reign, we were very poor. Right, we were very, very poor. For the large part of Emery's reign, we were very poor. Now, when Arteta came in, he gave us a bit of a kickstart and we all got quite excited about it and, you know, quite optimistic. A lot of us really bought into the idea of Arteta. But now it really looks like we've gone back to the mean average kind of thing. Now, my question to you guys is this just our level? Has Arteta come in and done what like a Sam Allardyce would do? He would go into a relegation threatened team, not saying we were relegation threatened, get that short burst of quality, not quality, but get the short burst of results, short-term change, and then 6 months down the line, because the team is not good enough, you revert back to the mean average.
Is that new manager bounce, isn't it?
The new manager bounce. Is that, yeah, exactly. So is it just a case of that? Is this our level or is Arteta vastly underperforming just like Emery did?
The second for me, personally.
I think it's in between both. I don't believe that this is Arsenal's level, to be honest with you. As bad as we are, we're not... 14th in the league bad. We're not that bad. But yeah, man, there are deficiencies in Arteta, in his capabilities. He's an amateur. If you think about it, this is, if you think about it in a non-footballing context, like, you know, if you were to liken it to a different industry, you know, and like one of the esteemed top tier positions in a different industry, and you employ a person to kind of lead that organization, lead that business, who's had no relative experience, it's quite preposterous. You know, he hasn't even had a youth team to manage, a B team. You know, you can look at like the trajectory of some other managers, like a Xabi Alonso. At least he's at Sociedad B, at least he's had the opportunity to kind of test his ideas week in, week out, by picking a starting 11, picking a formation and a framework. This is a guy who really, like, people used to run banter and say he lays out the cones for Pep, but really, that's what he was doing. He was setting up training, you know? So this is our number one guy at the moment. And I think, yeah, like, he was able to implement something to begin with. I think it's disappointing that there hasn't been a consistency, and he hasn't stuck to his principles, and he's tried to utilise so many different things. And he's played exactly 30 league games for Arsenal, and I keep talking about looking at his matches.
Chab loves the stat.
No, it's not the stat. It's not the stat, but it's not, because I've got no stats to attach to it, but it's about the performances more than actually the results. But if you look at that initial block, you know, his performances were a lot better when he first came in terms of his selection, how we were trying to attack, what we were trying to do. So to look at this latter 10 and to see that we've come such a, you know, we've fallen such a distance from those performances, from that intent, in terms of the way we were playing, the way we were trying to attack, it's worrying, you know, man. It's very worrying.
Do you know what a big factor is? So in answer to Lewis's question, I think it's, yes, in between the two. I don't think we're 14th in the table bad, but I think we're worse than we would like to be. So we're 8th to 10th bad. So, yeah, we're not very good, but we're not 14th bad. But then we've had, obviously, a run of bad results. A big problem is the imbalance in the team. So we have some very good players still, definitely, and we have a few, but we don't have a good team. And that's a big problem. And the negatives in our team are exposed in this league and exposed by the type of teams that we're playing at the moment, particularly the lack of athleticism in midfield, especially without Partey, particularly the lack of link play. So when I was looking at the team, we are so weak in the positions that matter, which is your offence. We played Willian, Saka and Willock behind the 10. And you're asking them to break down a Premier League team or to go and link an attack and to be a decent team. Wolves are, you say Wolves are bad, but they're a decent side.
Yeah.
That's terrible. Now, the big thing is, when Marteta came in, I think we're actually playing worse personnel, because we had Ozil in the 10 rather than Willock. Different level. We had Torreira, who, for all his flaws, he's a more athletic and a more suitable player than in the midfield too, than the Shaka Sabath pairing that we're seeing. So you have those two players. And the thing is, I don't know why Torreira was ousted, because Torreira didn't have a bad game under Arteta. Torreira was cold under Arteta. I don't understand why he was cast out.
Yeah.
Ozil was good under Arteta. He was at least better than what you'd think Willock would be, or better what Willian's performing. So he just had better players when he started. And that could have been, and obviously with the new manager bounce and everything like that, all of those are sort of little factors to why we were performing better than we are now. So I think with a fit and firing Ozil and a Torreira in the team instead of what we've got now, we'd probably be a lot better off.
You know, on that question, I think, and I agree with Shabs and Leroy, I do think it's probably in between more, but I'm leaning more towards Arteta. And simply because I'm just looking at a long list of mistakes that he's made over the last months that have led us to this point now. So, obviously, Leroy's already mentioned the Torreira treatment and him not being here anymore. The Ozil being excluded and the Guendouzi not being here. I think Guendouzi would give us some sort of mobility. I said in the group chat, we didn't have any game changers on the team sheet apart from Aubameyang. And whilst Guendouzi's not a proper, like, he's not a He's not someone that you think he's going to change the game every week, but he has this capability to take the game by the scruff of the neck, be brave, force situations that then force the game to maybe turn its tide. So we didn't have those players playing. And for all what we don't like about Pepe as well, he can do that every now and then. We know Ozu can do that. So those are all four players. Did I say four or three? But those are all players that can change your destiny a little bit in the game. And they're not playing. And then you look at other mistakes he's made. We've obviously extensively talked about the Saliba stuff. We've extensively, maybe not as much as we should have, actually talked about the treatment of Ainsley Maitland-Niles. So we always talk about...
Bizarre, right?
We always talk about the lack of physicality we have. And our right side is getting exploited quite a lot. We have Saliba not in the squad, who's an athletic centre-back. And we have Ainsley Maitland-Niles not playing, who's an athletic player compared to Bellerin. And if you think Ainsley Maitland-Niles is not really it, yeah, you can concede that defensively, in 1v1 situations, he's vastly superior to Bellerin.
He did it in the last game against Wolves, right?
Yes, exactly. And Bellerin has been getting exposed in those situations over the last few weeks, like quite blatantly. So I think it's a long list of mistakes that Arteta has made on the personnel management front that have led us where we are now, and also a couple injuries now. And a bad patch of form, and we look dog shit. And yeah,
let me read you guys out the team that beat Wolves just a few months ago, in July. So the defense was Mustafi, Luiz, and Kolasinac, Tierney, Cedric. We had a midfield of Ceballos and Xhaka, with Aubameyang and Nketiah and Saka. Now, Leroy, you mentioned that obviously Torreira, and for the record, I thought that day we were quite good. We were very solid. I don't think Wolves troubled us much at all. I think we were quite happy and quite impressed by how well we saw out that game. Now, granted, it's a different situation and we're at home and, you know, things have changed since then. But the quality on that pitch is probably, I would argue our team was better on Sunday than it was in absolutely. That game.
Player for player, yeah.
But absolutely.
Player for player. Now, no doubt. Why was our team able to put out a performance like that? I know it's a different formation. Maybe we should go back to this 3-4-3 or whatever it is. But why was our team able to compete with Wolves on that day? But on Sunday, we look a shadow of that team.
I think you're sorry, and you could also argue that Wolves are weak. I can't remember that Wolves side off the top of my head either.
The Wolves had Jimenez playing, they had Traore, yeah. They had Doherty, they had Neves playing.
Yeah. I think you could argue that the Wolves side that we played on Sunday were weaker than the one that we played.
They were, because Jimenez only lasted 5 minutes.
No Jota, he's gone. You know, he's at Liverpool now, he's one of their best players. Doherty. So yeah, that's it as well. But sorry, Matt, I interjected.
I think it's a mixture of things. I think one, obviously, momentum is a big factor in football, and we were on a real down patch and we were on a real up patch before. So like the mindset that you're in that game, I think we were obviously fired up and on the up. The second thing is, I think tactically, that day, it worked better than what we play, the way we played now. So as Arteta's obviously been trying to figure out for ages, the back four exposes our unathletic midfield. And it's a really big problem. So when you have the back three, it kind of gives you that extra security in that cushion. Another thing is, a big part of the problem is Adama Traoré. So you see on there, was it their second goal, where Adama Traoré spun two people in... So when we played them on that last game, Adama Traoré was completely locked down because we could double-team him. So we had Ainsley Maitland-Niles who funneled him inside and pushed him all the way into Kolasinac, and they just crowded him out. So they basically did a better job, in my opinion, of nullifying the way Wolves were trying to attack and their threats in that game. So I think it's a mixture of the momentum, and obviously we're on a big down patch at the moment, plus tactically that suited Wolves better that day. When I spit bars in a
ring, man, I go hard, last stand, tan. Football is back in full swing. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use the promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. When I spit bars in a rave,
man, I go hard, last stand, tan. Yeah, fair enough. So let's talk a little bit about what happened in the game then. So the first goal, I need a memory jog on this. I should have bloody watched it. So it was Neto's goal. So was it a shot that came off of Leno? Could Leno have done better there? I think Leno could do better there, man. I was disappointed that he's pushed that back out into play.
I think that's harsh. The shot is deflected, no?
It was deflected, but it wasn't like deflected. It wasn't like a mad deflection that, you know, like, I don't know. I just...
It didn't wildly change the course, the direction of where the ball was going. I think I agree with Lou. I think Leno was positioned to get there. He got there. It's where he directed
I think what I'm more concerned about is the direction that he's pushing the ball out in. And this has happened a few times now where he's pushing the ball in dangerous areas. I'm mildly concerned by Leno. You know,
I do think in isolation, it's probably harsh to judge that or label that as entirely his fault. I think though it hints at, I think we're looking at a collection of errors here from Leno in recent months, and I think that is what is more worrying and concerning for me. You could argue that you should do better there. It's six of one, half a dozen of another. But I think the bigger issue is that he doesn't seem as assured as he has, we've known him to be previously. And he is making silly errors. He has done these, though. He made a glaring one. He's done similar in the derby against Tottenham a couple seasons ago. We've got them on Sunday. I'm hoping for better from him. Don't attempt fate. But yeah, man, he does these things. He has these lapses, and yeah, man, it's. I don't know what it is at the moment. He just doesn't look as confident as he usually would be. Is that because he's got Holding playing in front of him?
Holding weren't there for this one, mate.
Oh, he wasn't, was he? Oh, nope.
So no Holding to blame it on him.
On that goal, if I remember correctly, was it that the midfielders didn't follow in as well?
I really should.
It was the goal when everyone was like, why didn't they clear? Why didn't they get to the second ball at least when they were close to it?
Yeah, the emotions in Discord. Do you know what it is? I just didn't want to rewatch this game back. So when the goal went in on Discord, I had Mariah and Sebi screaming on Discord. Like, Mariah was doing a vicious attack on me. It was very vicious, actually.
Very
unsavory. Yeah, very unsavory.
It's all right. I pulled up on them lot just now when they got Neymar. So it's all right. Revenge is sweet. I pulled up. I'm like, yo.
The thing is, Mariah is very difficult to rattle. Like, because he's got he's not invested in anyone. This is the thing. He's not invested in anyone. He's even dropped any stocks he had in Pogba and Martial. He dropped them out.
I think that's a front, man. I think internally, secretly, he's bothered. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, but you've got to play
good communication skills and composure. It's very good communication skills and composure. Because I have the same in my other group chats. I only come in and touch a Gunnar group chat and cry.
Irregardless, we managed to get a goal. Does this count as an open play goal? I don't know. What is it? It's a corner that came back out to Willie and he's crossed it back in and Gabriel just pammed it in. Is that it? Does that count as an open play goal?
Yeah, it's an open play goal.
It's a cheeky one. It's a cheeky one. But...
Nah, Lewis, don't do this, man. Don't detract from our, you know, we need to do everything that we can get. Don't work against us. It's an open play goal, man. What's the matter?
Fair enough, man. All right, fair enough, fair enough. It's open an open play
like,
goal.
You're missing like Marco, man. It's the open play.
It's an open play goal. All right, cool. It's an open play goal. I'll give it to Gabriel. Great header, by the way. I thought that was
He was
really
getting
strong.
Manhandled, everything. Yeah, like, he got up there and just, yeah, boom. That's what you pay your 28 million euros for.
Yeah. Do you pay the 28 million euros for how he defended against Pedence for the second goal?
You're working
against
us,
I'm
sure.
Is that harsh?
I'm sure of it.
You know what? Even though that wasn't great defending, his action forced a very, very good action from Pedence, because honestly, Pedence had to take such a good touch to even facilitate a shot. Yeah,
ridiculous.
And he did as well, to be fair. I mean, we know he's a very good player, and he did that. So... Obviously, Gabriel was on the floor looking like a stripper in Atlanta, but
I'm worried about the actions before it even reached Gabriel, though, because I think he's put in that situation where he had to engage Pudence, and I think it was he's probably looking at it like, well, he definitely looked at it like this is winnable. You know, I'm here 50-50. It's looking like I can come out with possibility of nicking this off in there or crunching him or whatever he intended to do there. But I think he got put in the situation, man. And this province guy was allowed to run inside and across the line like that. And it's panic stations, man. Like, we know what happens when players who are quick players, who are good with the ball, run at you, can get in runs at you. And it just happened, man. And he had to react. So, yeah.
Me, or on that goal, I thought Bellerin did some questionable defending, because the ball was inside, right, with the person on the ball, and there was an option out left, and Bellerin came very, very closely over to Luis. He basically gave him the passing lane. I don't know who was the player on the ball. He didn't end up passing, which was a bit silly, and so he got fortunate with the bounce actually falling in the box and close to the ends. But Bellerin basically gave him that option to just pass it and let him touch and then maybe pass it across or something. So, yeah, I think there was some questionable defending from Bellerin.
And David Luiz, his head literally was gone at that time as well. So,
yeah, that was crazy. Dr. Leroy, do you want to chime in on that? Like, what the hell was going on there, man?
I'm actually going to be annoyed because I've got an opposing view that everyone's saying, I can't believe he wasn't taken off. I wouldn't have taken him off.
Okay, why
is that?
I said this in the Discord.
Yeah, you said this at the time. Yeah.
And just to make sure I wasn't crazy, I've actually spoken to a lot of my other colleagues in sport, and they said they wouldn't have taken him off either.
So what's the argument for taking him off? The fact that he had like
I don't know. So, right, okay. The difficulty is, with the assessment with concussion or any type of head injury, it's all based on the history. Unless you see any obvious signs that there's been a neurological problem, it's all based on the history. So you have a limited viewing. So I can't say that because I don't have a lot of the information, but based on all that I saw, I wouldn't have taken him off. So yes, he's had a big head impact. But the thing is, the difference between him and Jimenez, I'm not sure if he saw it coming. When you see something, even if you see it for a split second, so I turn around and then the brick's there, my body's autonomic response is to brace itself. Your neck tenses, all your muscles tense because your body prepares for the impact. That is a big factor in any type of injury like that. But I didn't see that Luis lost consciousness. I couldn't take any of the history. He didn't look like he had any signs of neurological deficit that I could see. So anything like what we call ataxia, where in boxing you hit someone and they start bucking their leg. I didn't see any of that. So I didn't see any reason to take him off. And the thing is, they kept him on. The only reason they took him off was because of the cut and that he felt a reason of heading. But from a neurological perspective, I didn't see any problem.
Obviously, I think people get a bit scared when it comes to like cuts on the head. And because of the injury to Jimenez and the impact that happened to Jimenez, like, I think maybe people are like, well, how did Luis come away from that unscathed?
And the cut is the cut. So the cut's a very superficial thing. And apparently it was hurting him, which is what I can understand. And it's bleeding, obviously. But you see people going with cuts and stuff all the time.
Well, look at Terry Butcher.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, the cut's something completely different. But everyone would keep worrying about this neurological thing. Yeah, he's had a head collision, but for example, in So I need to caveat this saying I don't think football takes head injuries seriously enough. If that was a rugby, if that was a rugby collision, right, he would have come off, he'd have had his assessment, and provided all the history questions were negative, I bet he would have gone back on the pitch. So I didn't really see much wrong done by the medical team whatsoever, based on the information I could have, the little information I could have by seeing the from seeing the video and seeing the collision. Obviously, I was worried for him in there straight away because he's been caught on the blind side, and it was obviously a very big impact.
Yeah, I didn't actually, like, they didn't show any replays of it, so I don't think you're gonna.
And also, well, David Luiz was this part of the head, and
yeah,
I think this part of the head as well, so that's enough.
But yeah, Luiz didn't look right though after. I think maybe he was a bit worried about the bleeding, or it was just playing on his mind, maybe.
I said in the Discord, the only reason I take Luiz off is because he's the type of person, his head goes with this type of thing.
Yeah.
When he needs to be concentrated, and when he's not focused or his head's in the clouds, he can't perform. So that's the only reason I'd have taken Luiz off. But from what I saw from a neurological perspective, I wouldn't think at all.
Fair enough, man. But he did end up coming off. So he did come off at halftime. And then in the second half, it was kind of one-way traffic. I don't know if that's fair to say. Like, I feel like Wolves didn't do a single thing, but it was just a bunch of pointless possession bias. I think it was something like 70-30 possession. I think we outshot them like 9-3. Did we make any, what big chances would you guys consider us making any big chances in the second half where maybe we should have done better?
I don't think we made many big chances. I think we just was crossing inshallah, really.
Aubameyang had a good
header.
Chance.
You mean the header?
Yeah. And I think an in-form Aubameyang slots that.
Yeah, definitely. But I was going to say about that chance, we're starved for chances. Every chance Aubameyang gets, you're like, he's got to score that. He has to score that. It's like, he's waiting for one chance a game. And if he's not ready and he misses it, that's it.
I don't know. It's his fault. He's not himself, or he's
I don't think he is himself, to be fair, though.
Headers are low XG chances, though. So,
but I feel like this was.
I don't agree. I think, like, out of them, what, probably 1 in 4 go in?
That's still quite high, you know.
But still, yeah, 1 in 4. So 3 times you miss. It was 1 of them 3.
Let me try and find that XG, but I did feel like it was a big chance for.
I agree he's not himself. I definitely agree he's not himself. And I think he's mentally checked out because he's getting a bit fed up. But
I think let's draw on this
Saka,
a little bit.
Did Saka miss a big chance as well?
See, the Did second he? Chance, yeah, Bellerin fucked up the pass. Why is the pass in the air? If I'm his teammate, I'm telling you, why the fuck is the pass not on the ground? Pass it on the ground so I can put my body behind it. Like, if you put it in the air, this is a different, more difficult technique. I'll probably have to actually touch it. Like, he just makes it more difficult for the receiver. It's a poor pass. So I think Saka could do better, don't get me wrong, but the pass is poor. You should be enabling teammates, not making it more difficult for him.
Dan's vexed, but I do want to go to the other thing just a little bit, because we you know, this conversation was going off in the group chat as well earlier in the week as well, and we were talking about what it is with Oba. It was going off in the Discord as well. People are just saying, yeah, he doesn't look like himself, but yeah, he's gone backwards as a player. He signed his new contract and now he's doing what Ozil done and blah 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 blah. You know, I think some of this stuff is over the top, man. I think if you think about the type of player that he has always been, he's always, because to be fair, he did play on the wing earlier in his career. But again, different kind of function inside. But, you know, certainly in his best years as one of the top strikers in Europe, he's been a penalty box striker and someone who's thrived off of chances being created for him. And when chances are created for him, more often than not, he converts them. And that's what his game primarily has been about. His game has never really been about getting the ball, taking on players, having fantastic hold-up play. The type of guy to create chances for himself. I'm not saying that he can't or has never done it, but these things don't really define his game. So people are saying, oh yeah, he's not doing that. I'm like, what do we want from him? Because really the team is failing him.
The reason we gave Aubameyang his big contract is because he was outperforming. He was outperforming his XG by a considerable margin, right? So we gave him that contract, and you're expecting him to do the same. Now,
well, the team is worse now.
It is. It's the same worse team, though.
The team is worse. The quality in the team, there's Torreira is no Torreira is a loss. No Guendouzi is a loss. No Ozil is a loss. These are losses.
But my point is that Aubameyang, who isn't taking those chances, is worthless having in the team.
Yeah, but we have no one else.
What's the alternative? Lacazette?
The thing is, we can't reasonably expect him to outperform his XG like that.
No.
It's not sustainable.
It's a completely unrealistic expectation.
Yeah.
And Aubameyang...
We gave him the contract. It expects him to do so, no?
No, expect him to do so, because he is a good finisher and a good striker. If we get him appropriate amount of chances, he'll score the appropriate amount of goals.
Yeah.
But we're not getting him the appropriate amount of chances. Obviously, he's frustrated, but we are doing him a disservice at the moment.
Yeah.
We are proper doing him a disservice.
Big time.
You cannot expect someone who's getting 9 XG to score like 18 goals every season. And he's done it 2 seasons in a row. Mm.
Listen,
that is ridiculous.
On Aubameyang, throughout his career at Dortmund, he never outperformed his XG. He never did. He's done this since he's been at Arsenal because it was required of him. And he actually was he was able to do... So even with the little help that he had, he was able to do it. Now the help is even littler. It's going to be more difficult. And it was always going to happen. I mean, last season, I think his XG was 16 in the league. And he scored, 21, 22 goals? That is outperforming your XG by quite a bit. And that's just not... It's just going to catch up with you, I think, at some point. Especially the way our form and our team performances are going.
If you create an appropriate amount of chances for Aubameyang, he will score.
Simple.
I have no concerns or doubt about that with the Aubameyang.
Well, let's talk about it then. So, Arteta has... It looks like he's going to stick with his 4-2-3-1. He came out today and... When was it? Yesterday, he spoke about wanting to play this 4-2-3-1, but he needs like 5 or 6 players to do so. So do you think this is something he's going to stick with? Do you think this is... This, because we've long discussed, do we think Arteta is going to turn into a 4-2-3-1 manager, or is he a 3-4-3 manager? But it seems like this is the way he wants to play. This is the formation he wants to play with. Do you think that's going to continue, or do you think now that we've had, we haven't won in the league since the beginning of November, so for a month now, we haven't won in the league for a month. Do you think now it's time to maybe go back to that 3-4-3?
I was going to say, he didn't say 4-2-3-1. He said 4-3-3.
4-3-3, okay.
So he hasn't even attempted...
So he defines this formation as a 4-3-3?
I don't think so. I think he hasn't even attempted to play 4-3-3. And he's basically saying how...
He did it once. He did it Brighton. Against...
against Brighton, I think.
No, Leicester.
Oh, okay. This season, he did it against Leicester. He had Xhaka and Tobias playing wide, and Partey as the octopus in the middle. I think, and I was going to say the Wolves game kind of reminded me of the Leicester game, the way we approached, which is why I keep saying it's by design where we build and where we have the ball, and why Tobias and Xhaka are so far away from each other. This is by design. They're there to build in those areas, create overloads for crosses. And if the ball breaks down there, be able to kind of cover in those positions if the right back and left back are advanced. So it's really well designed. And this 4-2-3-1, there wasn't someone that could cover on both sides for them. So against Leicester, at least for one half, it was okay. Like we managed to sustain pressure. I don't think we created many chances, but it was okay because Partey was there and winning the ball back very quickly. Now this 4-2-3-1 doesn't facilitate that. There's not another midfielder centrally to do that. In the deeper areas, obviously Willock is in the high and in the advanced areas, and actually should give us the opportunity to find him between the lines, but he doesn't play between the lines. So again, it's just the formation is a bit flawed, and I think he should to survive this month go back to 3-4-3 and just ride out this month, because at the moment I can't see him picking the right players for 4-2-3-1. I don't trust him. Whereas with 3-4-3, I think he's more likely to pick the right players. He you probably should just go with whatever we did against United at OT and try to survive the month. Because he's not going to play Willian in the 10, which is what I think he should do if he wants to achieve something. And even that something is not much. So I'd rather we do 3-4-3. When I spit bars in
a ring, man, I go hard, last stand, tan. Hello, Meet here from Touchline Fracas. 2020 has already reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. So businesses all over the globe have been challenged to be their most efficient, and that means that every single hire that they have is critical. Indeed are the number one job site in the world, with more total visits than any other job site. Indeed helps you find quality candidates quickly, so you can focus on hiring the right person for your business. Unlike other job sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring, so you only pay for what you need. And now, Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a shortlist of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria that you can contact the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out for a free $75 credit at indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply. When I spit bars in a ring, man, I
go hard, last stand, tan. Leroy Shabs, what do you think? Is this something that Arteta is going to persist with? Is it something he should persist with? What should Arteta do? What should Arteta do?
Arteta should have a clear idea about how he wants to play, and he should go.
Spamming crosses into the box. Is that not a clear identification of... Are you not happy with that? Are you not happy with 33 crosses?
God. Please spare
Mikel Moiteta.
Please spare us. He should have a very clear idea of how he wants to play, how he wants to defend, how he wants to attack. And he should build the side accordingly. And we should see traces of that, you know, on both sides of the ball. We should see that. We should see versions of that. We should see progressions. We should see, you know, like, even if we're not, and I think that's what the frustration is. We're not seeing the you know, the final form, and that's okay. But we're not seeing the initial form either, you know. We're not seeing, like, him on his way. We're not seeing the building blocks. We're seeing nothing. What we're seeing is absolutely nothing. He's not setting the team out in an attacking sense to actually do anything that's meaningful. Like, I can't see it. It's very hard to talk about Arsenal and the way that we're attacking at the moment, because we're just not attacking well enough. And I think that's it's about the composition, it's about who he's putting out from week to week, and that's it. Like, I think he's unsure of himself, he's doubting himself, he's, this is where it comes into it. A more experienced manager is going to have faith in his beliefs, he's going to have a reference point, he's going to say, look, like I've tried this, I've tested this, so on and so on. But he's not, man. He's flailing. He's kind of saying, all right, I'll try this, and this isn't working, and the pressure's on now, so I'll try something different. And we're seeing three at the back, and then we're seeing a back four now all of a sudden, and then we're seeing, a 4-2-3-1, and then we're seeing 4-3-3s, and then it's going to be 3-5. Just pick a formation, pick a system, and just go with it.
Leroy, what should Arteta be doing?
Do you know what? It's a really tough question, because, I mean, what was the first question you said is, what do you think Arteta will do? I think Arteta's scrambling, so I think he's becoming quite unpredictable. So I don't know what he's going to do. What I get the impression...
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
A bad thing. Because it means he's out of ideas, because that's why I started chopping and changing, and you can see he doesn't really know what to do. And the impression I'm getting is Arteta is lost. Arteta is lost because I feel that he has a specific philosophy of playing that doesn't mean, so that you that can come under many different formations. He's got this positional style play where you have a very strict players in their zones and players do very specific things. But I can't see, I don't think Arteta can coach another way. I haven't seen it because, and it's actually so funny, yeah, because we've screamed to get Wenger out for God knows how long, but the squad that we have suits Wenger ball. Because we need to focus on connectivity. We need to focus because the thing is, he loves his wide players to go wide and have isolated situations. Pepe, Willian. Willian hasn't beaten man since he's got here. Pepe always ends up on the floor when he tries to beat a man. Nelson can't beat a man for shit.
Do you consider these combination players?
No. I think Pepe and Nelson, for a fact, will be a lot better in combination than isolated out wide trying to beat their man 1v1. I feel that would be a lot better. He needs to focus on trying to get the connection between midfield and attack. And the way he tries to do it with his passing horseshoe nonsense is not working. So I feel like he needs to bring the team together. I feel like he needs to bring his wide players in to combine with whoever the central striker is and the defensive midfielders. And I feel like he needs a bit more freedom. He needs to change the structure of his team, but I don't think he knows how to coach in another way. And this way is not working with the squad of players he has. And the thing is, it could work with other players. It really could work with other players with other attributes.
So why not? Let's just stick with him then.
No, we can't. We might stick with him. I mean, I think we're going to be stuck with him anyway. And I think if he gets all his players,
but if you think this, could work with a new set of players, why do you want him gone?
Because I don't think we have time for that. Because we would need to change 5 or 6 players, and all those players would have to be high quality.
So, what positions do you think he would need to get a?
I think
this system firing.
I think he needs 2 advanced midfielders. I think he needs a left midfielder, so a left winger or wide player. I need 2 advanced midfielders. He probably needs to flesh out the squad in midfield, so he probably needs 2 or 3 midfielders, really. And then another attacker, another centre forward. So you're looking at, 5 or 6 players. If he doesn't
want to achieve more in the next 2 windows?
If he doesn't want to lose Saliba, right centre back, of the required quality to be a top 4 quality, because all those players are going to cost 40, 50 mil. To be that level, if you're looking at your starting 11. I don't think Arsenal have got the resources to do that in 2 or 3 windows, personally, anyway.
I think I was just going to say, the only thing is, if he goes, you need, a new manager's going to have to rip it up and almost start again anyway. A new manager's going to need the same number of players.
They are.
I think a new manager is probably going to need a good 5-6 players anyway to make the squad complete. I see 3 positions in the Arsenal starting 11 at the moment, which I think are very secure, and that's the 2 summer additions, Gabriel and Partey and Aubameyang. And I think every other position in the side is really up for grabs, because I don't think... Oh, sorry, Kieran Tierney, so 4. I think every other position is up for grabs, because I don't think the players that we have are of the required level. I think the midfield needs a complete revamp. So again, Partey, safe as houses, but you need 2, ready-made midfielders, attacking facilitators who are good with the ball and who have got either both key attributes in terms of penetrating with passes or dribbles, or one who can do one really well, the other who can do the other really well. Man, it's going to take work. It's going to take transfer windows before we see anything, before we can hope for anything more from Arteta, really.
So I think another manager needs, we're going to need a revamp anyway. We're going to need a new squad, but I think another manager could do a better job getting us close to where we need to be with less players.
They'll
be coaching a different way.
This is my gripe. Is not, we know the player quality. That's what I'm saying. I'm not even trying to really talk about player quality and what we need anymore, because we've covered this. The problem right now is that the manager is misutilizing the players at his disposal. And that is wrong. And that is close to what Emery was doing. You're misutilizing players and you're not getting the best out of them. And that's coaching 101. You should identify what player's good at and put them on the pitch and let them do that. Right now, you're not doing that, and you're not finding a system that facilitates that. That is my criticism. And that criticism is also obviously it's obviously evident in the results that we're achieving right now. If we were getting by it, people wouldn't criticize it. But I would still criticize it, because I'm looking at it holistically. Like, I mean, we've been criticizing for a few weeks, and we actually been biting our lip a little bit. Like, it's not that bad yet, but we've been criticizing.
Probably since the start, maybe since the back end of last season, to be fair.
Yeah, we've been criticizing the same points. We're just progressively getting there now. Successively, we are here now.
Dan, let me ask you a question then. All right, this is a question to all three of you, actually. All right, you're Stan Kroenke right now. What do you do?
I've put the money in for Arteta already this summer. I think, not me personally, but I think what he will do...
What would you do if you were Stan Kroenke?
Listen, I wouldn't have even just Partey in the summer. So that question is too loaded. I would have splashed the bag in the summer.
Like, answer the question, big man. Come on.
I need the answer.
Get some cojones and answer the question.
All right, I'll give it to Leroy because he seems like.
I'll give you the answer. I'm bringing Arteta tonight, and I'm telling him, listen, by the end of this month, you need to be at a certain place. I haven't looked at the table yet, or I haven't looked at our fixtures all yet, but I'm telling them you need to achieve this amount of points, or we're going to have serious...
But Stan, I told you to get me an advanced midfielder in the summer. You didn't get me what I needed. What do you want me to do with this group of players?
I ran you lot the money. You lot didn't deliver. Yeah. I ran the money. You need to talk to Edu then.
Edu's your guy.
No, you hired Edu.
You
and Edu are in charge of football operations. You didn't sell the players that you should have sold. And that's why you're...
That's not Arteta's fault.
He told Holding to stay here, boy.
But we wouldn't have got anything for Holding. Holding makes no difference.
He told Ainsley Maitland-Niles to stay as well. He didn't want him to leave. He's not using them. That's 20 mil right there.
So what are you doing then? So if you're Kroenke...
I'm giving him an ultimatum. I'm letting him know that you need to achieve this amount of points by this amount of date, or we're going to have a serious conversation with you, your position.
Leroy, what are you doing?
Realistically, we're not going to get anyone we want in the season. So for me,
Poch.
Poch is never coming to Arsenal. That's okay. Ridiculous. So for me, I'm going to get my burner phone out of my pocket. I'm going to get someone to deliver a burner phone to Southampton and be like, Hasenhüttl, yo, start sweet talking over the phone. Yeah, how you doing?
I would have said that's more unlikely than Poch, no?
No, that's more likely than Poch, because Poch won't come to Arsenal because he's looking for a top club. Hasenhüttl will come to Arsenal, but I don't think we have to get a mid-season. That's the main thing.
So you would sack Arteta right now?
I would only sack Arteta right now if we could get the appropriate replacement right now. So if we could get Hasenhüttl now, and I could be sure of that, I'm sacking him and I'll replace him. If we couldn't get Hasenhüttl right now, I would say, listen, Arteta, you've got what you got to the end of the season, do your thing. I'd back him in January, but I'd back him with players that...
Like universal players.
No one's going to not like Partey. No one's going to not like Gabriel. No one's going to not like Jose Mawa. Those type of players I'd be targeting. I'd back him with players not specific, just undisputed quality. And then we'll see what happens. And then I'll wait until the summer. And at the end of the summer, then I'll make my decision on who I'm going to try and get, because I'll be sacking in the summer.
I like that answer, Dan. I thought that was very... that was the kind of answer I was looking for.
That,
right?
That answer is better than mine, to be fair. I'd still phone him up, you know.
Shabs, what's your answer?
Similar to Leroy. Not exactly the same. If I'm Stan Kroenke, I'm backing Arteta as much as I can in the January window and hoping that he can get in... We need two signings. So I'm pumping enough money in to bring in two attacking additions to the side. And then I'm holding out to the summer. I reevaluate his performances, see if there's any change at all in the performance, in the level, in the application, in the output, in the results. And then I make my decision then, to be honest with you. I think that's what I would do personally, if I'm concrete.
See, I kind of feel like, though, don't you think that this month he's under a lot of pressure, that I think we could slip even further this month?
Before we get onto that, we've got some listeners' questions, because I know we're running out of time. So I want to get some listeners' questions, but one's going to touch on what you're going to say, Dan. So this is from Vui Nuandoro. He's a £20 patron. Big up you, Vui. He's been on a pod a few times. You're going to become a patron. Join our Patreon. It's in the bio.
Yeah, still.
And
more than the Morley's money
as well. Yeah, more than a Morley's. There we go.
Big you up, man.
we need to get Vuyu back on, actually. He's due an appearance, so I'll contact Vuyu this week. A report this week said that the board are all in on Arteta. Do you reckon if this abysmal run of form continues through the Christmas period, Arteta will be sacked? So more on not what would you do if Kroenke, what do you think Kroenke will do?
I can answer this question.
Go on, politician hat.
I think it was they were always going to back him. He's their guy now. They've only made him like the manager like three months ago. They were always going to back him. So I think they're really hoping he rides through this. But I think this line of fixtures we got coming up is not easy. And we've been dropping points and fixtures that you could see and we could think we should be winning this, like Leicester and Wolves at home. We should be winning both of those games, especially with the way teams have performed. But I think the pressure could really mount on them come end of this month, because if we continue this line of form, it's just there's no way you can defend it. And we'd be very close to the relegation zone if we don't pick up points, if we don't win games. We've just not won a game in too long, and we can't have another month of not winning, you know. So especially in the league, like whatever happens in Europa League is fairly irrelevant, because those games you could win playing the Hawaiian board. So I think it could be sticky for him, but I do also think that he will pick up the odd win. I think he will pick up one or two wins. I think he will survive. But I think it will be close still. Like I think he's on the hot seat right now, and it's active for him.
Can anyone see Arteta being sacked in by Christmas?
I can't see him being sacked by Christmas at all. The only reason I can see Arteta being sacked is if he genuinely is at risk of getting relegated.
I think there's probably three teams in the league that are so bad that's just not going to happen, right?
Well, I will say. I will say, even with our three losses on the bounce and our poor form, we're still closer. And the fact that we're 5 points off.
Yeah, we're closer to the top four than we are to the relegation.
Than we are to the bottom.
Yeah, it's very condensed.
How far away are we from the relegation zone?
7 points.
Seven.
And we're
seven
five
from bottom three.
With 5 points from top four.
That could change. It could, but it's
so condensed in there. It's like, you know, Aston Villa are considered to be having a good season. They're 2 points ahead of us. Man United have been on a good run of form. They're 3 points ahead of us. Everton, there seem to be all these vibes about Everton. They're 3 points ahead of us.
Fourteenth is a little bit of a false position at the moment, because just one round of results could completely change what the table looks like in terms of.
And we've played Man United.
There are so many teams in between. We're 14th, and there's like what, like 10 teams in between us and fourth, basically. Mm. But there's 5 points across those 10 teams. So, if any two or four of those teams face up against each other, one of them is going to pick up points or drop points. Or you see what I'm saying? So, a round, two rounds, and it could change. But Arsenal do have to pick up points, they have to pick up wins. It's just the bottom line.
Okay. Marvinho, he asks, has the fact that Arsenal's aims for most seasons is to make top four affected players mentally, especially ones that come from teams that used to challenge? So when they get big contracts, they subliminally lose that winging edge because there's nothing to play for. So the old pension home syndrome.
I slightly disagree with that, because I just think generally footballers are, they're in the elite brackets to get to that level.
Willian looks like he's on a holiday home. Okay,
Willian's a bit of an exception, because he's already achieved quite a bit.
Willian is in Butlins, bro.
He's come to pick up a paycheck at Arsenal, isn't it? But like generally, like Arsenal players that play in the Premier League and play at this level, they've gone through a lot of hard work to get where they are. So I just feel like they have this intrinsic, is that the word, the English word, intrinsic motivation? I just doubt that they don't have the ambition to win and succeed, because that's what drives them to be where they are and alongside with their talent. So I think it's all about whereas they're not as emotional or like as expressive as the old guard. I think they're about if they're in environments that facilitate success, they will embrace it. If they're not, they won't. I think that's how this new generation of players are, and I don't want to use an example. I use an Arsenal player, because Ozil is still an Arsenal player. Ozil in the German national team, the expectations were completely different. Like, and winning games before obviously the 2018 World Cup, it was, they were always competing for the trophies. They're always high level of expectations, and he played always well for the German national team. It's because that environment is given at the national team. At Arsenal, it wasn't. And so when he was playing well for the national team at times, he wasn't playing well for Arsenal when we didn't play well, you know? So I feel like if you create an environment for players to thrive, they will thrive if they have the talent.
Fair enough. I've got Pillard 81 is back. Big up you, Pillard.
Right,
hey.
Not Patreon though, so.
Sign up, Pillard. Man.
Sign up.
He's on the Discord though.
I don't think Pillard knows what. Yeah. I think Discord is about as far as it goes.
Yeah, he was on the Discord facts on Sunday. Also,
We need to probably. He's a bit old, isn't he? So we need to tell him about like what Patreon is. Yeah. So Pillard 81. He says, lose to Spuds and Burnley. Does Arteta Villas-Boas get the tin tack? I don't know what tin tack is. He's 40 years old. He's using a terminology that I have no idea what he's talking about. But yeah, Pillard 81, I think we've already answered your question. I just wanted to read it out because, you know, Pillard 81 is our new Touchy Gooners mascot. And our ultimate respect from me. He would respect, by the way, what Terry Butcher did in the 1990 World Cup, right? He would have said, Louis's got a cut on his head. He don't want to play anymore. Get on the fucking pitch, son. Yeah, that's what Pillard 81 would have said, all right?
1990 when he lost to
Germans. What the fuck took in cashing?
You weren't even born. You were born in 2004, man. What are you talking about?
I know my history. That's all.
JT Jan, he asks, what do you think Arteta and executives have to do in January and the rest of the season to fix Arsenal's chance of getting European football?
We're not getting European football this season. There's no, it's absolute no.
Might win the FA Cup again, mate.
Well, we're not winning the FA Cup.
You said that last year. You know you actually said this last year. You actually said verbatim last year. Like, I can probably find the pods that you said
it. I'm saying it again this year. We're not winning the FA Cup.
You never know. If we get Mansfield, Cheltenham, Yeovil, and we end up in the bloody FA Cup final, then...
Probably go out to Newcastle. Who we've got next?
What, have we got them after Spurs?
We've got Newcastle in the Cup next round. First round
of the FA.
Oh, do we? Oh, bloody hell, yeah. Yeah, we might actually go out against Newcastle. But, what do we have to do to fix our chance of getting European football? So in January, is there anything realistically we could do that you could foresee that could fix our issues?
If we sign three players, we could, but it's not realistic.
Yeah. You've got to go for the belly. That's it. If you get Szoboszlai, Awa, and I don't know, throw in a 1v1 demon.
Neymar.
Then, yeah.
We might make Europa League.
We might make it out the hood, like, you know. But otherwise, forget it.
Arteta just made some comments actually. He said things will move in the market, and we'll be prepared to do something, knowing the limitations of the market in January and the limitations we've as well to sign players. We're planning, talking with Edu and with the club, and the things we can do in January. At the moment, it's pretty difficult, unpredictable, as well in terms of places, as we are very restricted at the moment. Doesn't sound promising. They've said to Arteta, yo, free up the bag. However, Fabrizio Romano, yeah, tap him, Merchant Romano. I will retract that comment when he actually does decide to come on the pod. But until he hasn't, he's a tapping merchant. He said something about how he's expecting Arsenal to do I can't remember what the word he used to describe, but he said like madness, hashtag.
Hashtag madness, basically.
Yeah. What's your guys' thoughts on that? What could be the hashtag madness?
Listen, they ain't going to rot me in again with this nonsense.
Yeah. I'm not getting drawn into that, to be honest with you. I think, and I've said it, for me, it's acquisitions. So it doesn't have to be purchases, but acquisitions. There are some players who are across Europe at the moment who are maybe not playing as much football that they would that they would like to play, who we might be able to snatch up on loan. There's a tournament next summer as well. Some players will be vying for a place in their national side, who aren't playing regular football. So if we could get one purchase, one loan option, and they improve us in their attacking sense as well, I'd be all right with that. I'll make peace with that. Ultimately, I always said, like, I want to see us play good football. At the moment, I just want to see us create chances and score. That's what it is, man. The good football has to wait for another season. Yeah, we need to get back to scoring goals first and foremost, man.
Okay, I think we'll leave it there, lads. This has been depressing enough to do, and we've given you an hour of our depression. So
misery.
Yeah, we'll leave it there. I'm off to take my antidepressants, prescribed by Dr. Leroy.
Oh, they did Lewis dirty. They got Lewis moving like Stan in it in the video, and that just kills me all the time. Don't do that. Don't go on any drives. Don't go on any long drives.
I think we're gonna. I think I'm gonna need to go on a fucking drive all the way to Scotland after Sunday, mate, because we are gonna get clapped against Spurs.
I don't know. That's gonna upset me so much because Spurs fans are so loud.
They're so annoying.
All three of them. They're all
for no reason. Yeah.
And you know, we've got the Touchline Hotspur pod now, and they're just super jarring. Like, there's a couple of them that I think we're gonna do a Patreon preview piece with them, or some kind of preview piece this week. We've got to do this.
We'll just let them cuss us for an hour.
I mean we've got a few comebacks, right? I mean, they've never won the league before. They're competing in a league that they've never won before, so that seems to get them riled up, you know. And
no Tottenham fans have got any chat for me. Not a single one. They can't. I mean, what they're going to tell me about success is getting
nearly merchants.
Get out of
talk
it.
To him, Shad. Like, talk
no
to him.
For me.
But it is going to be unbearable. But do you know what? Like I said at the start of the show, if you guys do want to join us on the Discord and share your pain with us, you know, as a collective, join us on the Discord. Yeah. Sign up to our Patreon and you can join it as a collective experience and be as one. All right. We'll suffer as one. So you can find a Patreon link in our bio. We'll be back sometime this week with a Patreon piece and also the Discord on Sunday for the Spurs game. Lads, have a good evening and take it easy.
Yes.
It's got to 2-2 and we've still got more than half an hour to go. And here's Ozil, Lacazette, Ozil!
Yo! Man could have had that fight, but I'm gonna walk on sight. Man had to grab that mic. You're not gonna spit this time. Trying to work with a good energy. Man gonna work with a bad man vibe. None of these guys can't do
it. It's Aaron Ramsey.
My shine. That's foul. Man,
that's the response of Arsenal.
Man crossed the line. Score for my team in the time I play. Where better know when man's
Chelsea. Man can't say that. Simply lost their focus in the joy of it.